Hey everybody, Shane Presley here, rocking up a podcast to tell you about my friends over at Music Record Shop. Find them at 4191 A Manchester Avenue, right there in the heart of the Grove, between the demo and the ready room. Hey, check it out this Saturday, April 16th is Record Store Day. Come on down and check out what they got going on. Doors open at 7, first 25 people are in line, get an exclusive bag of goodies, and then over at the demo right next door at 11 a.m., live music from Brother Lee and the Leather Jackals, 18 and Counting, Adult Fur, Old Soul, and Old Souls Revival. So come check all that out. And lots of great exclusive vinyl. Go to recordstoreday.com to see some of the stuff that they are releasing this year. And then if you need any more information, feel free to check out their Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or musicrecordshop.com.
Podcast is kind of like it's like a radio show that's not on the radio. It's on the internet. Does that make sense?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. That's also like my mom. It makes it sound more confusing, doesn't it? It sounds like this.
This is Dan Frigolette, and this is the Rock Paper Podcast on iTunes.
This is Dan Frigolette, Rock Paper Scissors Podcast. Listen to it.
That's not me.
Pretty good, right?
That's not me.
Hey everybody, Shane Presley here, Rock Paper Podcast, coming to you from beautiful St. Louis, Missouri, hanging out in a Denny's.
Should we tell them we're in the Denny's?
Yeah, sure.
Let them know.
Hey, if you're hearing this wonderful soundtrack provided by Denny's, hanging out with Andrew Frank and Dan Frigolette.
Boom, he nailed it. He said he was going to get it wrong.
Thanks
for having me. Yeah.
What I win.
It was exciting.
Big money.
You can take one bite out of my sandwich.
Perfect. Did you guys get the Moons Over Miami or what?
No, he went with the Superbird.
Superbird.
And I got the regular club.
Pretty solid choices, guys.
Yeah, man.
It's a classic hangout for comics.
Yeah.
Denny's or things similar to Denny's are very classic hangouts.
Yeah. There's a bunch of them in New York, actually.
Yeah.
There's the West 4th Diner we all go to.
Yeah, so you are from New York?
I live in New York, yeah. I live in Hoboken, which gets me a lot of flack because it is in New Jersey, but I am still part of the New York comedy community.
Yeah.
So we're here actually doing a little trip, doing a little tour with Andrew Frank, who won a contest that I put on last year in this area. And we claimed that he was the funniest guy in St. Louis. So we're doing it again on Friday and Saturday to find the next one.
Yeah.
Because we're sick of Andrew.
Right.
It's done.
Yeah.
And we're going to take somebody on the road. That's the whole thing.
Andrew gets booted and the next guy comes on the trip.
Right. Friday, the 15th at Blueberry Hill. And then, the first round of?
No, that's the semifinals. We're actually in the Elvis room.
Yeah.
This time. Last year we did the Duck Room. I wanted to see what the Elvis Room was about. Most of the community we got to know last year, so a bunch of guys sent us their best seven. Best six in a video, and we picked guys for the semis and the finals. We're gonna do the semis and pick five to go to the finals, and then finals are all going to duke it out and do a couple rounds, and then we pick them.
Yeah. And then, so then the finals will be the next night.
Kind of Saturday night.
Saturday
night. 7 o'clock.
7 o'clock.
Jefferson Ballroom.
Jefferson Ballroom.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's cool.
And that one, the finalists are going to do two rounds. Because when we divide it up into two sets, it really shows us who can structure a set, who has material, and who is good for the road.
Who can structure two sets.
Yeah, structure two sets.
You come out doing your hot three.
You got to make it to the next one to do the next one, so you can't just do all your great. You got to save stuff,
sure.
But you have to have stuff at the start, too. So
yeah.
It's a good way to judge who's good.
For sure. So how long has this competition been going? I mean, like, as a
year after year.
Yeah, this is the eighth city. First time I ever did this thing was in Syracuse, New York, and we packed out a theater. We actually did it over 4 weeks, and we packed out a theater in Syracuse called the Palace Theater, 1,000 people. And it was 2007, and we found the guy. So over the years,
it was Carmelo Anthony.
Carmelo Anthony won. he dunked
huge
on the entire audience. And so we
decided to forego the comedy career and
yep
go, take it to the NBA.
Went straight to I'm good for a second actually. Yeah, I didn't get there yet. So that's what happened. So
who did win though? Honestly,
this kid out of Rochester, and the thing was I gave him all these prizes. I gave him headshots. Same kind of thing I gave Andrew, and he didn't follow through with any of this stuff. Kind of like Andrew. Andrew never got his headshots or his website or his anything else. So the only thing Andrew did was get in the car with us and drive to Alaska. So that's
shows.
Actually.
That's the real price, is just doing a bunch of shows and getting the experience, because the more comedy you do in other cities, the more it shows you about people, the more it shows you about yourself, and the more it shows you about your art. So taking it on the road has really taught me a lot.
Yeah, very cool. So that's the Comedy Best Kept Secret Tour, right?
Yeah, so the prize is join the Comedy Best Kept Secret Tour, where we go from coast to coast every year. Well, that's what we've been doing the last 2 years. But there's monthly shows all over the country. We got stuff going on in Martha's Vineyard. We got stuff going on in Albany, Glens Falls, Saratoga Springs. We got some stuff that we do in the Baltimore and D.C. area. So we always got something going on. Other prizes, the Hoboken Comedy Festival, New Jersey Funny Fest.
At a movie theater. It's pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hoboken.
Yeah. So that was it. So that's what's happening.
Yeah.
A lot of good comics here in St. Louis, man. St. Louis is great.
Yeah. No, I'm fully aware. I've been doing this show about 2 years now, and I've been trying to do all I can to support my friends in comedy. And Andrew's a returning guest.
We sat in
his basement.
Last time I got in trouble for the podcast, though.
Yeah.
Trouble by whom?
My parents, or my dad mentioned... Well, basically, someone in his congregation, he's a pastor, listened to the podcast, and I said, motherfuckers, on it.
Did you? So you're going to do the exact same thing again? That's your plan?
Well, now I'm referencing it, so...
sorry, there was quotes around that guy's footnote.
But I'll defend my use of the word motherfucker.
Motherfuckers? You said motherfuckers?
Motherfucker. Well, he asked me to do an intro to the show, just right. So I go...
So you're like, it's rock,
I go,
paper, podcast, motherfuckers.
Well, I go, enjoy, motherfuckers.
It's so
and
funny.
That's it. It's just a very positive thing.
I started doing comedy, and I would say bad words, and they didn't have anything to do with my jokes. And then over time, I eventually realized that that's not the way to be. So it was like it actually surprises me that would be something that you blurt out. What's funny about you actually, and I didn't realize this would be a thing, because you are super clean on stage.
Sometimes
you'll use profanity when necessary, but it's not what your set is about.
Yeah.
But it's funny how you have no problem just yelling penis in like a crowded casino.
What are you talking about?
We were just talking. We were walking in the casino, River City Casino, last night, and we were telling a story. And I like, because there was people around, I started kind of whispering the story. And he just like, no, my dick. He was just like, my dick. And like, nobody.
And I don't recall that.
People turned around. It was whatever. I know you don't recall because like you didn't register it as like I shouldn't yell out about my dick right now in River City Casino. It was kind of amazing.
That's what the stage is.
You gotta whisper. You go blah blah blah, and you go my dick.
That's crazy.
My dick.
Doing it softly is so much stranger than...
A stranger be like, my dick, we were talking about my dick.
Yeah, I don't know.
But it's funny.
Yeah.
It's a funny thing. The comedians lose our censor.
Well, you'll have to have me back for a third episode where I can explain that portion to the congregation in the Father's Church. It's just a whole series of podcasts where I'm just like, no, the last time, I didn't mean it.
No, dude, I've been in a situation where I went on a podcast that was like a super specific, like, just like tell your kind of, it was like a tell your dirty sex stories kind of thing, and I did that, and I was talking to a girl at the time, and she heard the podcast, and she was like, I don't think we should hang out anymore after the podcast. I lost, and I haven't.
Whereas
if
it were just another girl, she'd be like, "We should hang out more."
So I've lost two girls over podcast interviews. It's very strange. It's a very strange thing.
Well, hopefully not.
And Andrew got kicked out of his church. So listen, we all have our things that happen.
Right.
I'm just gonna be doing weird things as we go. Andrew's ripping up napkins. I'm gonna rip up a thing here.
Yeah.
That's just gonna be part of it.
We should have got the coloring ones.
The coloring ones.
Yeah, we should have. Could have been doing some coloring.
So what? So what's going on with Shane, man? What's going on with you? What do you have going on?
He loves concerts.
What's the big news?
That's his big thing.
Yeah.
Every live performance, this guy goes to support.
Yeah. You're the
every concert I've been to in town,
he's there.
Yeah, he's there.
No shit. It's great.
I try, man.
Just a fan of everything.
But he's
a fan,
like,
of the arts.
You probably don't know about, but there's a, I guess he's a St. Louis legend, but Beetle Bob, right?
Yeah, sure.
Beetle Bob. But he kind of has a bad reputation a little
Beetle
bit.
Beetle Bob does?
Whereas Shane, everyone says nice things about him.
Right.
All the time.
Well, until that moment.
But I don't know, why does Beetle Bob have a bad reputation?
He did something weird.
Well, I think a lot
but
of...
But you can look at his Wikipedia article. He's been to a concert like for the past, like something like 9,000 nights or
you
something.
You were Beetle Bob.
No, Beetle Bob.
Got it.
Yeah, I don't have a Wikipedia.
Yeah. but Beetle Bob's been, and he was at a show I was at.
If you're
there,
listening,
there,
we'll make him a Wikipedia page.
I went to a bluegrass show, and I was like, oh, is that Beetle Bob? In the crowd,
yeah.
But he's been to a concert every night for the past like,
something ridiculous,
like 9,000 nights or
something.
Oh, let's talk about what happened.
Do people live that long?
Oh, yeah,
is that too many? 9,000.
Right. I think it was 1,000,000. 1,000,000 days in a row.
Yeah.
People live 1,000,000 days?
I don't know. I have no idea.
No,
I have no idea. You're the one who's got the complicated math jokes. I don't know. Oh, let's talk about what happened at the open mic tonight. I went to the open mic at the Funny Bone here in the beautiful St. Louis.
Is that your...
And something weird happened.
You were there.
I got there late. A guy got on the mic as the show was seating and, like, started singing this crazy tune, threw a bunch of CDs at people, got escorted off... Well, not escorted, but got yanked off stage.
He did, yeah.
Tried throwing eggs at people. People threw eggs at him.
Yeah.
He gave the eggs that he was... going to throw at people,
yeah.
And then they. I think he knew though that was that.
And then he just yelled at M or F or.
Oh, do you? You can say like, it. I'm, you know, like but then you know you got to come back on the podcast and apologize or defend.
Well, if that gets me on the podcast again, then these motherfuckers need to know. So he yelled a bunch of stuff and then came back in the room. It was very strange. I was very upset with that the bouncer didn't do anything earlier. Like I saw he was about to throw the stuff and he didn't stop him. He just stood next to him.
Yeah, but that Duck kind of likes to see things play out. Because Duck just stood there with his arms crossed, looking at the guy.
He smiled
at
his face,
He'll go for the laugh, Duck will.
That's funny.
Yeah.
So, were they raw eggs? So
I think he hard-boiled eggs. Which is way more painful.
Sure,
but less messy.
Yeah, less messy, yeah.
And then, but
so
we,
I don't know
we,
who he was
like,
concerned for.
But I didn't get a copy of his CD. I wanted to hear what was on the CD.
Yeah. What do you think it was?
I don't know, man.
just pictures of him?
Yeah.
Well,
it was a 30-minute album. That's what it said. It said
30.
Yeah, I saw it.
Oh.
It was called Jacked Up.
Okay.
And it was 30 minutes and 57 seconds. And it just said Stone on it. I don't know if Stone's his stage name or something.
Is this like his performance art piece?
Yeah, what if he's a genius? Like this, he doesn't do anything. He just does this at every open mic, like in the country.
Yeah,
and then like he'll be playing a theater by next week. Like that's like we're gonna really envy this.
Well,
guy.
The point is he can play anywhere he wants to because he just hops on stage before
right.
the show
and
starts.
Sings in the
like I could play Madison Square Garden if I just jumped on the stage yelling.
What if this is how Gallagher started? He just came out, just ran into a room and just started smashing watermelons.
Yeah. Time we bring that back.
Yeah. No, it's not. That's the his brother's doing it somewhere in the country right
Gallagher
now.
Two.
Yeah.
Gallagher 2. Gallagher 2, he calls himself. I think he did food before. See, this is the problem. I get all hung up on things like this. I'm like, we got here first, and they're getting our food before us. What's going on,
you
Denny's?
Guys, I'm so sorry it's taken so long.
It's okay.
Our new cook, our manager's getting involved in it right now.
Really?
He doesn't need to get involved?
Well, your ticket got lost.
That's okay.
And so I'm so very sorry.
It's okay. Usually we would demand that he's fired, but we're looking for blood. Okay,
here.
Blood, not from you, from him.
Sacrifice.
All right, bring him out. We want one of his fingers, honestly.
You got it.
I think that's fair.
I'll let him know. You need anything else?
No,
we're good.
For it.
Thank you.
I just I was just thinking about Big Lebowski when he's like. You need a toe, dude? I can get you a toe, man.
I can get you a toe, yeah, because I can get you a toe.
Funny.
Now, Dan, you got some jealousy to you. That's one of your things.
What's that?
One of your driving factors.
In life?
A little bit of jealousy.
Just about fairness.
About fairness?
Yeah. we're still talking about the Denny's. We're still talking about the food, right?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. About fairness. I want to... Not even about fairness, actually. It's not about fairness. It's about preferential treatment. I just want preferential treatment.
always.
But aren't the people outside of you going to say that that isn't fair?
I know, that's what I'm saying. No, I'm lying. It's not even about fairness. It's about preference.
It's about fairness for
I
you.
I think I'm hot shit, and I want it, I'll go to the same bagel shop in Hoboken every day because I don't have to wait online. They just see me, they point at me, and they start making my bagel.
They point at you.
My Dunkin' Donuts, they have my coffee made. As I'm walking in the door, they make my coffee, slide into the side, give it to me. And I like that. I like the preference. I always wanted to be a regular.
How long did it take to achieve that status?
Years. Years. Every day for years. No, I really don't know. I mean, I'm there, and it's held on for a while.
How long did it take you? Shane's a regular everywhere.
Yeah, you just get to walk in, right?
A lot of places.
Do big covers anywhere?
Not a whole lot.
That's great. It feels good.
Sure.
That's what life is about, baby.
Why do they let you do that? What's the secret of being a regular?
He's pretty non-threatening.
Well, I also do a lot for all them, so yeah, like yeah. I plug all the shows.
Yeah.
I do like a rundown in town. Like I do it weekly, but a lot of Friday night and Saturday night I try to push it big time. But
nice.
There was one night I shared like 40 events in town on a Friday night, and
okay.
I was like, you know, so yeah. A lot of these places appreciate that I'm giving them free advertising and stuff, trying to get my friends out to their shows. And
cool.
So I mean,
tell you, I saw Marquise Knox again at the Ballpark Village.
Catch me up.
What's that?
Who's Marquise Knox?
Marquise Knox is this blues prodigy. He is honestly the future of blues, I think.
Okay.
And he's what is he, like 25, 26?
Yeah,
what
do you think? Mid-20s.
He's been playing guitar since he's like 3.
Yeah.
He's a blues guitarist.
Yeah. Wow. I saw him on 4th of July, and he blew my mind.
Yeah.
And now it's like, I would just want to see what this guy does for the rest of his life.
Wow. He's
already a master.
Right. I mean, he's like, was playing out like 16 or whatever. He's been already at it for a long time, like playing clubs. And like, you know, it's like seeing, you know, Muddy Waters or something, you know, like as a kid.
Jordan
in
his prime.
Yeah.
Well, and I think that is kind of a phenomenon that's going to happen.
Does he recognize yet?
I think he's international.
He's been on some documentary stuff about
some festivals.
People know he's the one.
But I think the phenomenon of the 21st century is like, because we can document our art so well, and because we basically accumulate culture and store it through the internet and stuff, I think young people can gravitate to it faster and learn more about it early on.
Versus
before, because now we have access to information. So when I was a kid, I watched a bunch of stand-up, you know, and I listened to all of it. Not just the records your dad had or, like, the, you know, you saw a little stand-up. Like, all of it is on the internet.
Yep.
And I watched, Johnny Five. You study all of it, you know.
Johnny Five.
Anyone who is passionate about their art becomes really obsessed with it, and now your obsession can be fed much more through access to information.
Yeah.
From a young age.
Right.
And so I think guys like him,
so you think it's
guys
gonna,
like Marquise.
Do you think he's going to help? You're going to help him. Going to help him.
Absolutely. That's why he found that he was the next blues guy early on, is because he got acquainted with the history of blues.
Oh, you're saying
very
it
early.
Helped him become
him.
A better artist.
It helped him. It helped me with comedy. It helps everyone.
I thought you were saying it's going to help people discover him.
Well, if they follow the lineage of blues. Like I don't know. Like I know with hip hop, I worked backwards.
Yeah.
I like listened to some of the new guys.
Well, when did you
and then I went backwards.
When did you first hear hip hop and be excited about it
in high school?
But who was it?
Like Kanye or like
that's funny, man. Because okay, so my first my
and then
first,
I went backwards. You know?
My first. How old are you?
I'm 30.
So my first hip hop was right when Death Row Records was starting to hit it big and Tupac and all that stuff. So like it's just interesting to see. Somebody join hip hop at Kanye. That's an interesting thing.
Or like, you know, now people are like getting into Kendrick first.
I knew you were gonna go to Kendrick.
No, like junior high kids are like, oh, Kendrick, and then they get like he's great.
Yeah,
and then they go back.
You sure they aren't like, hey, Ray Shrummond? Are you sure they aren't doing that?
I don't know. Who's Ray Shrummond?
They look like the three guys we saw at the zoo today. They're like 14 years old.
Yeah,
they got crazy haircuts. Yeah,
yeah.
Skinny jeans, the whole thing.
It's like
you know who Ray Shrummond is?
Yeah, it's like what ear?
The crisscross.
Yeah, but their name is like
it's a drum. How dumb are we? We can't do it backwards.
The ear is something backwards.
Shrummond.
Shrummond.
It's a drummer's ear. Drummer's ear.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Huh.
See, Ray Shrummond.
But no, they're terrible. I don't know.
Hilarious. I didn't know what was gonna happen. He's like, they're awful. No, they.
What if you're supposed to play all their songs backwards?
I think that's what it is. Yeah. No, they sound like they're going through puberty on the record. I don't mind it. Yeah. I don't mind it. It's kind of catchy.
Right.
But when they get really excited, like their voices crack. It's kind of funny. Okay. But they're rapping about making money and strippers.
Okay, let me ask you this. Like in terms of like when you first got on stage, has your voice changed since you got on stage?
My physical voice?
Yes.
The only thing that's happening now is that because I'm on the road so much and we talk to so many people at night, my voice throughout the tour gets deeper and raspier.
Oh, yeah.
And I have to figure out how to do comedy and be more likable with that voice, because I have a little bit of a higher voice than this, and I can hit a higher register normally, uh-huh. but it's not there right now because my voice is just so thrashed. So I mean, it is a little bit.
I remember reading about Tom Waits. Do you know Tom Waits?
Okay.
Singer. Has the crazy raspy voice. He had a throat doctor specifically to like kind of take care of his voice, and he was like, "Man, your voice is just beat up,
ruined." Yeah.
Yeah. And so it's just certain atmosphere, and everything was smoking back then.
Right.
Every place he played was smoking, and he smoked obviously. It's not like he was just smoking; it was like everyone was smoking for him too.
Yeah, sure. We started the trip in Vegas. Vegas was rough.
Vegas.
We were there 4 or 5 days, and it was a smoker's paradise, man.
Yeah. I was listening to a podcast the other night about and how like everybody like.
Yeah, good.
Good man. How you doing?
Doing pretty good. So, can wait pretty long for this over?
A little bit. Yeah, that's gonna be me.
It's all right.
Oh, I see what happened. I see what conversation we're having. I was saying the club sandwich, and then the side was the Caesar, and then they put the Caesar in the sandwich instead. That's where we got confused. That's why she was doing a thing. Oh, she did. Okay, perfect. Thank you.
That's the manager right there.
Yeah.
He did get involved.
He did get involved. And there's this blood on my sandwich because as I asked for blood, they put the finger in the sandwich.
Customer's always right. They just present you with a finger.
What are you gonna do?
I was listening to this podcast the other night though, and they were talking about that, like how Tom Waits' time and stuff when he's coming up, how there was like smoking on TV all the time. And just,
I love it.
Thank you.
Well, and it came back like, smoking, which is the worst.
Yeah.
It was legal to advertise it. But then it became illegal, but then they put it in movies and television as a loophole. And then even recently, Mad Men probably spiked people smoking even more, because it makes it look so glamorous.
It's cool.
Yeah.
Well, now
like just having pretty people smoke.
And
it's
now,
like,
and now
but like if you smoke, you're not going to be a pretty person,
But now people are smoking the e-cigarettes on the TV, too.
Right.
Which who knows what those are.
And they're good for you, man. They're good for you.
Yeah. Packed full of vitamins.
Yeah.
That's what this one guy was trying to tell us on tour.
We met a kid who
in Phoenix.
A kid who told us it was good for you, and then tried to prove the point that there's no way that it's bad for you.
Right.
I had to call in for reinforcements, and I'm not very good at arguing. I had to call in for Andrew. Andrew listened to 3 words of the sentence, and he just went back to a different conversation.
I wasn't going to be a part of it. I'm not getting in a debate that is that obvious.
All right.
Thank you.
So Dan, I got to know Andrew pretty good from the last podcast, getting to know a little the history of his start and stuff.
Yeah, ask me the questions. What do you want to know?
So you started in New York?
I started in Syracuse, New York, in a club called Viva Debris. It was a magic and comedy club. A guy by the name of Joe DeLion, who's now in Florida. I love this guy to death, man. He was great. He was super supportive. I was 20 years old. I talked my way into the club. I said, "Hey, I'm not here." I made a reservation. I brought my buddy down with me. He was a magician, and my buddy is a guy who, even at 35, looks like he's 15. So I said, "Hey, man, put on a nice pair of slacks. Put on like a polo shirt. Let's go down to the club and let's go have a fun night." I made a reservation for us, and of course, he gets in the car and he's wearing I don't know if you remember Adidas Superstars.
Sure.
Shelto, like jeans with like rips in them, and like an American Eagle polo shirt. Yeah. So he looks like a 14-year-old kid, and I'm like, son of a bitch. So we're driving down there, I'm concocting a story. We get to the door, say, "Hey, my name's Dan, reservation for 2, and they were like, "Are you guys 21? And then I don't know what to do. I panic, and I just go, "Is the owner here?" Like, I just like thought I was gonna like big up this lady, not knowing it was his wife. That's his owner here. She goes, "I'll go get him." So Joe DeLion shows up, probably about your size. What are you, 6'3", 6'4"?
Yeah.
So he walks up. I'm, 20 years old and intimidated. And I'm just like, my name's Dan. This is Jim. He's a magician. I'm a comedian. We're not here trying to drink or anything. We just want to see the show. We don't make a scene. We just pay whatever, 2-drink minimum for a couple sodas. We just want to watch a show. He doesn't say anything, just nods his head. They let us in, and at the end of the night, he comes by and talks to us and invites us to just hang out for the rest of the summer.
Can you do his voice? I would imagine this guy like has a like a
you guys are my sons now, okay? I don't have any kids.
Was that it? Was that the voice?
Yeah. So you don't have any kids. I don't have any kids.
Exactly
you guys are my
son.
You guys are my sons now. You just come here. You
know. I got rid of the old ones.
I killed them. I killed my kids. Not even kids. And he had us hang out. I mean, my
it's
buddy.
Funny. No one wants a magician for a son.
That's funny. Yeah.
Nobody.
My buddy did a couple magic tricks for him. They went back and forth. They had a little magic trick battle.
He made his other sons disappear.
So, I got up to the club twice, then moved to London, came back, and did comedy 3 or 4 times at Syracuse University. Every 6 months, I'd like put a little show together, get my friends out, do whatever set I had at the time, and then just from that, I mean, I'd probably been on stage a dozen times, and I was like, I'm moving to New York, I'm going to do this. First person I told my buddy's girlfriend, and she said, "What are you doing after graduation?" It's like, we're having those speeches. And I'm going to New York, I'm going to become a comedian. And she goes, "Dan, what do your parents say about that?" And I was just like, "Oh, people just don't get it. People don't get it." And I was like, "My parents actually support me. They love me, and they care what I want to do."
Yeah.
So I moved to New York, moved to Brooklyn, and just started figuring it out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very cool, man.
Yeah.
What was going on in London?
I just studied for like 6 or 8 months there. I was there for
study what?
I was just with Syracuse University. They had like a satellite campus.
So him and Carmelo Anthony.
Anthony went over there. So we had a satellite campus. Like, we went over there and we
Carmelo went to Syracuse. That's the joke.
Oh yeah. He went to Syracuse and he won our championship. He's great.
Yeah.
He also won Make Me Laugh, right?
He won Make Me Laugh. 2007. He won Make Me Laugh 2007. So and he didn't take my headshots. But no. But I actually went to London. So I had been on stage twice now. When I was on stage the Wednesday before I, 2 Wednesdays before I left, and the Wednesday before I left, I got on a plane like Friday. I went to London, and the first thing I did was get a job picking up glasses at the Comedy Club. It's called Comedy Cafe. It's in, I think it's in Old Street in London. And
can anyone fail a comedy class?
What's a comedy class?
You just said the comedy class.
No, comedy club. I started picking up glasses at a comedy club.
You started picking up glasses.
Glasses.
Oh, okay.
I was a busser.
I know a lot
at a comedy club.
I know a lot of people do comedy classes.
Oh no!
And it's like, can anyone ever fail? Like, does anyone like? They're like, nah, we're gonna hold you back.
As long as they don't. As long as you pay your bill, they'll take your money.
That's the whole
thing.
That's
how comedy classes work. Yeah. But I just
watched. The check cleared. You graduated.
They're like, wait, what's the 4-digit code? And The club in London was great. I learned a great deal about how comedy is way different in England than it is here. And I came back.
How is it different?
Respect. That's the main thing. The audience respect.
So Rodney Dangerfield wouldn't work over there?
Doesn't get no respect.
You guys respect me too much.
Crowds care about it.
You guys appreciate my artistry.
They want to be there. They love it. And that's the majority of the crowd. There's, you know, they drink a lot, so there's a couple outliers or whatever. But I think in the United States,
you get
the opposite. I don't know if they drink
Is
more.
Is this the drunkest country on earth?
It's tough, man. It's part of the culture of a lot of places to drink. So I think they handle it better in England, but they do drink more. But also the timeline is shorter because the bars close at 11 in England.
I feel like in America a whole accent developed through whiskey.
Which How's it go?
Like, you know, kind of southern accent.
Do it.
I'm not going to do it. But I think that, you know, a whole speech pattern evolved due to alcoholism.
Yeah.
You know, it was so widespread that they were just passing down language. I was just slurring their speech, and then it stuck.
I like it. You're making him do all these voices. I'm not going to do it.
I'm not doing it. What does this guy sound like? It's not part of the bit, man.
Right.
So, England they're great. I think here the vast majority is a crowd of people that don't really know how to be audiences and don't really know what they're expecting. And there's a couple people that are there and they appreciate it.
Yeah.
But I think we've changed a little bit. I think comedians and comedy is closer to a kind of this sort of like people go and they appreciate it if they're at the right venues, and they treat comedy and comedians like underground bands that they're hoping and praying.
Who doesn't?
England? No, I think that's the thing here? That's happening here now. Finally.
Okay. Well, I think people are just starved for live performance.
Yeah.
You know, that's why Shane goes out to live shows all the time. He wants the connection of a live experience.
Yeah.
And I think everyone does once you really taste it. But I think entertainment kind of neglects that and kind of isolates people and alienates you from other people. It's weird. It's like, you know, audiences, I think, are trained. I think a lot of our lives are trained through television, the way we speak and the way we approach certain things. And it's kind of a passive mentality. It's kind of an apathetic attitude, television watching. And then social media kind of is the opposite, where it's like it gives you a voice. It says your opinion is important, even if it's not. But it also isolates you in communities that are similar to your own. So you surround yourself with people that are like you. So like, but that mix of the passive attitude that television teaches you and the kind of like selfish attitude that social media gives you makes for weird audience members.
Yeah.
You know, don't you think?
Sure. Yeah, I mean, again, it comes down to the experience. And venue goes a long way. Comedy clubs generally. You're gonna get, and depending on the day, you're gonna get a drunker rowdy your crowd that you know either doesn't know what to expect or doesn't know how to handle themselves. Then if you put it in like a theater, like we did.
But that's what I'm learning now, like about adults, is like they, a lot of them don't know how to handle themselves in public.
Yeah.
You know?
Friday is a fiasco of people. Those are the people that are going out. They're wild cards. That you know they've been waiting for Friday for so long. Friday shows end up being this situation, and then Saturday, you get the other end of the spectrum, which is the people that planned. They didn't do anything all week, so now they're like, they're the planners. Like, we have to do something, or I'm going to shoot my husband. We have to get out of the house, and then they go to the show, and they don't know what to expect, and they don't know how to be a real person and an audience member. So you have both ends of the spectrum. So you have these calm, sort of reserved crowds on Saturdays, and these rowdy, get drunk crowds on Friday. So you know it's interesting to be in the same city and play two different venues, two different nights, because you're going to get polar opposite crowds sometimes, one day apart. And you're like, what happened? You're like, I thought. Day one, you're like, I thought I loved St. Louis. The next day, you're like, what's going on in St. Louis?
Okay, so let's do this. So from our side, performer side,
yeah,
we could basically tell what we want from an audience member.
Yeah.
But Shane is the best audience member in all of St. Louis.
Yeah.
So tell us what it takes to be a great audience member. Tell us what you expect from other audience members.
Right, right.
Just to shut up and,
yeah.
Enjoy the show. You know, I don't get that. Like, you know, I'll go to these, like, I listen to a lot of singer-songwriters and stuff. And I'll go to these rooms, and a lot of them are, you know, acoustic kind of stuff, you know, laid back. And people will sit there and talk the entire show.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, how, you know, why are you paying $15 or whatever to come to a show and sit and talk? You know,
Well, do you think we've been trained to
consume while we're doing our own stuff?
No, that's one thing. But have we been trained to basically phase out lyrics because oftentimes they're not important?
Right.
When we talk about pop music or you talk about mainstream music, they're not really ever really saying anything, so it doesn't matter.
I don't think that's it.
But I think it is.
I think
there's rarely ever a true message in a pop song.
I don't think that's true. I think you need to. I think you don't need to listen to have the experience of music. Music is the thing that you dance to. Music is the thing that you feel. So you can do a lot of things. You can't do that with comedy.
But singer-songwriters,
yep.
Both merge but, the musical side and the lyrical side.
Okay,
the poetic side.
That's
of
That's a fair
of music.
Argument, yep. But I don't think. The vast. I don't think all of the people going to that room are like, okay, this is Michelle Branch. I got to listen,
yeah.
Or like, you know, I don't have a good example of like what a singer is going to be. I saw Andrew immediately quit on the argument. It's Michelle Branch.
I was like, oh, he doesn't know.
But so, I don't think a vast majority of people, me included, separate those two. Music is music. That's it.
But it can be so much more. Just as like
we got that great jazz club in Phoenix. Yeah. And people were talking and trying to fuck and doing their thing. That's what music.
Sure.
You go to music, you do that, you dance, you rub your. You
but
rub your
she also said
somebody.
Some beautiful things.
She was like, great. She was incredible.
I was listening to her.
We were sitting down watching.
She,
but that doesn't mean the guy next to me wasn't trying to finger his girlfriend. It's just, you know, that's what the experience of music is.
Mm-hmm.
And,
but that also shows you something like whenever. an artist puts themselves out there as a performer,
yeah.
Not everyone is going to pick up all the things that they're putting out there.
Right.
That guy heard the beat, he heard the bass line,
yep.
and was interested in this girl.
Yeah.
Whereas I was sitting there on the stool and watching this woman, and she, as the song was starting, she basically explained the blues.
Yeah.
She told us what the blues was and where it comes from.
Yeah.
Inside of herself, and I thought that was beautiful. Whereas that guy didn't hear that part.
Do you think he fingers girlfriend to the beat? Do you think it was like right up? Is it right up beat?
To the blues?
Yeah,
just like a sad.
He was like he was strumming the bass line. Yeah. I know I've done that. I had a song on. I'm making love to my girl, and I got a song on. And next thing I know, I'm doing it right to the beat. And then I get uncomfortable about it.
I just wish there was that element, like in the comedy club, you have those bouncers, door guys, and things.
Yeah.
You have security around and things.
And you got to make sure you got the right ones.
Right.
But ultimately, the comic is the number one source of authority.
Yeah.
The comic can change it, but sometimes they can't do it. Sometimes it's just such ignorance.
But the comic needs to know how to do it, because a lot of times those other fail safes don't succeed.
That's
so
true.
Like the door guy won't take care of it, or the waitress,
or
the waitress is basically like, that drunk heckler is my best customer.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
You know,
but
have you seen his bill? It's $500.
Yeah.
I know it's $500. He's saying gibberish to me right now and racist shit.
But a lot, you know, they'll say, you know, shut the hell up or get kicked out. And there's not that a lot of that mentality in music, you know. So like
that's true. That's
unless
true.
They get too out of
that's hands, true, right? They, like the scene in Llewyn Davis, where the guy's just yelling, that starts and ends in the same place. The guy's yelling at him while he's on stage.
Yeah, and the owner just thinks it's funny.
Yeah, but some people are changing the culture of that. Like, and I'll just use this as an example at the Kevin Hart show. They tell you the whole show: do not take your cell phone out. Do not record. If you take your cell phone out, we're taking that son of a bitch, and that's it. It's over. And people will still take their cell phones out when Kevin goes on stage, and he's got a team of like 30 dudes to walk around and snatches up cell phones, and you know, and nothing specific about the artist, but there's something about that that's changing the culture of saying, look, this is a live performance. Shut up. Put your phone away and pay attention, because this is a once in a lifetime experience. This isn't TV. You're in a room with this guy, and he's going to make you laugh. The live comedy is the whole thing. It's going to make you laugh harder than you ever have, and respect that. So I appreciate that somebody's doing that.
Here's an idea for a new business I just came up with. The whole business is, you just people pay you to take their phone for a day, so that they don't, and then they experience life, and then they're like, that was worth the fee.
Yeah.
Just being away from my phone all day. But if they they actually have to give it to you, and like, even no matter how much they beg you, you're like, nope, this is my job. I'm supposed to take your phone.
This lady, you signed a contract.
She's like, I need to check it. Did he text me? Did he text me?
He's like, no, go live your life.
My flight information's on there.
I saw...
Is there any text that is that important?
Yeah.
What? what text?
It's like a time-sensitive one. Like, it's the panties off. Get here now. That's time-sensitive, baby.
I knew you were going
to
go.
Don't pretend like you didn't. We just drove 6 hours the other night because you wanted to get home because you have a girlfriend here. Don't pretend like that's not a virtue that you care about.
It is a virtue I care about.
He was so slick about it too. We got off the thing. We're in Tulsa. We got a lot. We've been
very
driving.
Wise about my method.
We've been driving all week. We're doing our whole thing, and so he knew just another 4 or 5 hours. What was it? 6 hours wasn't going to make a big
hours
not big of a difference, but it would have been nice to sleep and then come back the next day. And he was like, "Nah." He's like, "You know what? I feel pumped up, man.
I just feel better if I was home.
Let's get home." So. We got back,
I'd just rather go home.
About halfway through the trip, I noticed he was heavy texting his girlfriend. I was like, "This son of a bitch is going to go get booty tonight."
Yeah, I saw you're talking about Kevin Hart. I saw Chappelle at
my
the pageant. Yeah,
my favorite.
Which one did you go to?
When was this?
I went to the very last one.
Halloween.
When was this?
Yeah, the Sunday night.
Within six months.
I don't know if it was. No, it's 2015. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
No. It was 2014, right?
I don't remember. I think it was 15.
What'd
no,
you think?
It was 14.
No, 14. October 31st, 2014.
What'd you think?
Well, so, but you know, we're talking about the Kevin Hart. That's he had a DJ like spinning before and stuff, and then like there was some of our friends got to open up
for Chappelle.
Yeah. And then, but they and then like the DJ. did a little bit more in between and said, look, you know, hey, everybody put your phone off, turn it, put it in your pocket, don't take it out.
Yeah.
And like everybody's saying, you know, just like you're saying, and like they had security like pacing the the theater. It felt like we were at a, you know, like it was like a prison comedy show or something like that.
They're all,
like,
they're all holding shotguns with rubber bullets in them. Don't take the cell phone out. Don't do it.
And somebody, somebody whipped their phone out and was sitting there recording, and Dave stops the show. He points her out, and he's like, look, ma'am, I see you recording. Security came and grabbed her, took her out, and all this. And it's like, so the
took
whole...
Took her out, sniper.
Yeah, right.
They took her out.
Took her out.
Yeah, sniper.
But the whole show, like, came to, like, a screeching halt, you know? Like, it. So, but obviously, Chappelle being a pro,
and then, like an ass, she's in the lobby talking about, I want a refund, blah, blah, blah. And I said, bitch, we told you, don't turn your phone on.
Yeah, but I don't, I don't get that. Like, I might, at a concert or whatever, might record a song or whatever, just something, but yeah, I mean, we live in that generation where everybody has to record everything and, like, have to hold their phone up the whole show.
Watch it. Just watch it. You'll remember it
better. You know what it is? I think it's we live in the Snapchat era, the whatever era, Instagram.
Yeah.
And it's experiences. I think, the bad way of looking at it, but it's the kind of the popular way of looking at it. People think experiences are only validated if you share them with other people.
Status of being
at documenting things, which obviously documenting things is important, but it's the same phenomenon as being experienced when you go to a live show and you're experiencing something with that's a shared experience.
Yeah.
Not in a technological sense, but in a visceral sense, where you're physically connected with the other people around you, physically and mentally, whereas showing somebody,
I would like some more coffee. Thank you.
Showing someone a representation of what you've experienced, which isn't necessarily the real thing, it's removed from the real experience, is what all of social media is.
I want people to know. When I'm at something cool, I want people to know about it.
I know. We went to the zoo today. Dan couldn't just...
Snapchatting monkeys. I hung out with the monkeys for a little bit, but I Snapchatted the monkeys, and I wrote, you know...
Yeah, but now you're Snapchat friends with all the monkeys, and you're going to just share all the other stuff.
Well, add me on Snapchat, Dan Frigolette, and you'll see my monkey story. It'll be great.
Yeah, that's probably a good segue to plug your... follow us on Twitter and...
Oh, we can do that. Dan Frigolette.
Come see a live show. That's it for me.
For sure.
I don't do that.
Yeah. Huh?
Nothing. Oh. We didn't say anything. Can I have a little more milk, too?
Yeah, you got it.
Where's that finger?
come see these guys. You guys are you guys actually performing, or are you...
So we'll probably split it up. But everybody's going to do a set. Everybody on the trip is going to do a set either way.
Okay.
I'm not sure exactly how we're going to break it up this time around. But I'll probably host one of the shows, one or a few of the shows.
Right.
Do some time up top, and we'll get Andrew in there while we're deliberating.
And then we got the tour show, which is the winner will perform with us at 9 o'clock on Saturday, the 16th at Jefferson Ballroom.
And that'll be a straight set either, you know.
That'll be long sets for everybody, so it'll be great.
Right on, yeah. So, yeah, Friday night, the 15th at Blueberry Hill, and then Saturday night, the 16th at Jefferson Ballroom.
How are we doing on time? Are we rapping, or are we...
Yeah, well, we can do whatever. You guys want to keep going?
I don't know, man. I kind of wanted to know, how long is this? I don't want to over...
We can... There are no rules. We can do whatever.
How long are we at?
We're about 40 minutes.
Okay. So. Who have you seen that really changed your life? I mean, we were talking about hip-hop, and then who Andrew saw first, but for comedy, let's say, who did you see live that really put things in perspective for you comedically?
You
saw the Chappelle show. What'd you
think
of that show?
Yeah, the show was really a lot of fun. I mean, the guy is just... I've been a huge fan of his for a long time.
I think he's the best comic right now.
I think that's even an understatement. I think he's a virtuoso of comedy, like the way that he can take something from the audience, just a little crowd work button, some at the Cellar, little crowd work button, and turn it into like this joke that everyone in comedy would have loved to have written and worked out for like months, and he did it right there, went in his ear, it came right out, it was a perfect joke. He's incredible.
Yeah.
And what was my other point? What? I don't know what my other point was, but carry on. Sorry.
Well, I would probably say the one, and it's. He's not a true stand-up, but the one who made the biggest impact on me personally so far I saw Kevin Smith at the pageant.
Interesting.
And like,
he's not a stand-up.
He's not a stand-up, but he is a comedic writer and stuff. So he was up there. He was doing like a one-man show, speaking about his films. Talked a little bit about podcasting.
He's nerding out, right?
Yeah, and so he, you know, everybody was real quiet. Told all his stories, and then at the end, he opened it up to Q&A and had headlines of people on each side. And he kind of bounced back and forth and answering questions. And a lot of people asked about podcasting, which I thought was interesting for a guy who's spent a majority of his adult life as a filmmaker and making some iconic movies and in comedy. And everybody wanted to talk about
Smodcast. Well, was one of the first big podcasts.
But here's, right? Here's what it is. And I see this a lot with my friend Andrew Schultz is on a podcast with Charlemagne.
I was just about to bring up the live show I saw.
Well, so what happens is, we had in Hoboken, we had him do a live show. There's a live podcast, and I don't remember how many times they had done it before, but I was like, listen, I really want you to do this as a live podcast, and people came out in droves, man. It was crazy. But what happens is when you're home with your headphones, you're doing your personal thing, and it turns comedy and podcast. It turns it into what music is for people. Is it speaks to them directly. Mm-hmm. So when Andrew and Charlemagne are on there and they're talking about whatever, they're talking about dating, they're talking about women, they're talking about men, they're talking about growing up, they're talking about hip hop, whatever it is they're talking about, you know, you feel a personal connection to that, and then you feel like you know that person. So, you know, podcasts, you can really pick the thing that you have an interest in. So the Kevin Smith people, I mean, they think they can just walk up to him and have a conversation with him.
Mm-hmm.
We experienced that a little bit in live show with comedy because we put ourselves out there. We're vulnerable. We talk about who we are.
A lot of times after the show, you'll find out how well people actually know you based off what you just said on stage.
And they'll ask you, is that true? And when somebody asks you, is that true? Then the next thing you're going to say is something that relates to that because they had the same experience. Like, you know, and that's something that touched their lives. And podcasts have that.
Cool thing on this tour so far, talking to people after shows, is like, you know, a lot of my jokes are about religion or politics and stuff, and they're jokes, and they express the way I feel about those things. But for the people who are interested in those things, they want to come up to me and tell me what they think about those things, and then we get in these like beautiful discussions about those things.
Right. What is religion? Is religion?
I really get to know what people personally believe, which is kind of the whole message of some of my sets. Is just like think for yourself. And be a critical thinker, and be able to discuss how you feel about things and then what you think about things out loud.
Yeah,
and to add your perspective when you come across a new perspective, and to assimilate that with yours, and to be able to weigh what you think is true and what's not.
Yeah.
So that what's really cool is I've been connecting with crowd members about, like, they're like, here's what I think God is, or here's what I believe, and I'm like, oh, that's so cool.
And we
get to talk about that stuff. And sometimes they're way off, I think.
Yep.
And I
sometimes are crazy.
And then sometimes they show me something I've never looked at before.
But that's a neglected side of what this is and what live performance is. And that's why we're really focusing on playing rooms like we are. We're playing 60 to 150 seat rooms, and that's first of all, that's the spot for us because nobody knows who the hell we are. But the other thing is that's the sweet spot for comedy because those people come up to talk to you. I mean, if you ever get to that place where you're playing a theater for thousands and thousands of people, you can't connect with those people. There's just no way to do it. I mean, you can't stand there after the show for 3 hours and talk to people. And so having that ability now with what we have, I mean, it really changes the whole thing.
Yeah.
And it's a neglected part of comedy. I mean, everybody has that joke about, like, somebody came up to me after a show and they said this and that about my joke and blah, blah, blah. And they say another joke about what that person said. But that's kind of our favorite part is talking to the crowd and really having them, you know, open up to us.
Yeah.
Because they just watched us open up for 45 minutes.
What's funny is, like, so Usama Siddiqui, who's great.
Love him. One Make Your Life Albany.
Joined us in Dallas, and we were kind of talking about, we were in the car talking about stuff, and I kept referencing conversations we had on the tour, and he was like, man, you've met a lot of people on this tour. And that's part of the beauty of a tour, is you learn a lot through conversation with people. And, like, honestly, that's my whole method with stand-up. And just life is like you learn stuff by talking stuff out. And you go on stage, you talk it out. Or you talk to people and you learn new things, by meeting new people, new strangers.
Trying to build fans. There was a guy who saw me last year in Festus at Tetros, and he came back this year and he brought a girl. He said he was talking about me for the whole week. He saw I was on the schedule, kind of came back. I didn't know what just
unfortunately
that
guy's life. They hated the second show, horrible. They'll never come back.
They hated the first show, but he's like, I want to see if this gets better. But you know what I mean? I didn't know that guy was in the audience. I didn't connect with him the first time, and I got to talk to him this time. And actually, there was a thing that happened at the last show that I kept referencing through crowd work, which was this lady who had a Prius, and she was trying to sell me a Prius during my set, and she was actually at the show this year, and she sat back and watched. She didn't want to be part of it. Didn't want to.
She wanted to see the non Prius crowd work show. She wanted to see what like how is he going to pull this off without my Prius crowd work?
Yeah, she thought she was a whole part of the show probably because it was, you know.
You're just still hanging on to that. A whole year's gone by, and you're like, oh, this,
"Where's that lady? Prius. Where's the Prius lady?"
I mentioned a Prius.
I went to just see Joe Coy over at Helium a couple weeks ago, and he did a ton of crowd work, and it was all hysterical, but did very little of his material, and which was it was fun, but also I kind of would have liked to see him.
As an audience member that didn't feel good, you wanted to see him.
I mean, it would have been fun to, I mean, not everything I've heard, but it would have been fun to a little bit more of a balance. But the crowd work was like, I laughed real hard through a lot of it.
Yeah.
And it was fun to watch him improv it, work that out. And, this was also it was like a Thursday night, so there was also only 50 of us in the room or something.
No. That's the other thing I was going to say, man. We've been doing shows every night. Like the last tour when I took Andrew, I think we would skip Monday. Skip Monday when we could. We had an occasional Monday, but we've been doing Mondays and Tuesdays. Sundays are probably the lightest, but Mondays and Tuesdays, people come out hard. And people that come out to see something good on a Monday, Tuesday, the quality of audience is better because they're not there to drink. They're going to go home. They have a bedtime. But they're there for the show, and they want to have a good show. And we've been giving it to them. And they've been great. One of Andrew's favorite shows was on a Monday.
Was it?
In a Black Box Theater in Albuquerque. That was Monday.
Joe, this guy in the front row, I believe his name was Fred Guile, and they started in... And
you know the guy, or they came out through the set?
That came out through the set. And Joe started making, and he was like, this like super cool black dude. And so Joe started kind of, becoming a character on the stage. It was like, said Fred Guile, and then it turned into like Fragile or something like that, and then he developed this character, and he just started. Joe was like cracking himself up at this and stuff, and he's like, "Man, you got to go on the road with me, though. Yeah. Like, you got to come out to Vegas with me next week or something like that." And I was thinking,
he shows up in Vegas. Yeah. Joe's like, "Oh,
what's going on?"
I do that every show.
Yeah.
He's like, always has a group of group of crowd members from various cities showing up. Like, you told me to be on tour with you.
He deliberately mishears the name, makes him Fred Guile every time. What'd you say? Bob Smith, Fred Guile. That's crazy.
He shows up in Vegas like, so how's this work? Do I get on the tour bus?
Do I sleep in bed with you? How do I do it? Oh, this is what I was going to do. This is what I forgot. Was one of my favorite pictures ever is it's a picture. It's at Oddballs, which is an outdoor comedy festival that happens pretty much. It might be coast to coast, but I know for
sure. That's the one Chappelle did, right?
Yeah, but I know for sure it's in the Northeast, but it's the Oddball Comedy Festival, and it's been growing.
Chicago and stuff. Like that.
And it's been growing for the years, and so there's a picture that I love, and it's Louis C.K., Aziz Ansari, Hannibal Buress, Brody Stevens, Amy Schumer. I already said Aziz. It might even be Dave Attell, a couple other guys.
Fred Guile came along. They asked him,
and they're all watching Chappelle do comedy.
Oh, nice!
And that's it. Chappelle's not even in the shot. It's just them watching Chappelle, and I think either Hannibal or Amy posted it when it happened, and you can just tell by their body language, by the expressions on their face. It tells a hell of a story. I mean, it really. I mean, if I can get my hands on this photo and get a real version of it, this would be something I would hang in my house. You know what I mean? But where my future children would live.
Sure.
I mean, that's how powerful the image was of just them watching him do comedy and just the some people have very some people are just really enjoying it. Some people are just literally studying him. It's incredible.
Yeah. Yeah, I was saying all that. I thought it'd be funny if you took the Prius lady on the road and, bounced off.
Good gas mileage.
Great gas mileage. She's a little older too. She'd be the tour mom.
Yeah. So is that who was the guy that you first saw that you were like, that's what I want to do?
And this is tough, man, because he's in some trouble.
Same. We don't have to say his name.
But it was a special from 1978 with the changing background. And he really, it was something that I watched with my father and my family, and we all have it memorized. Yeah. And
was that both of us? That's our thing?
Yeah,
because that was mine.
We watched it every year. Yeah, and I'd watch it every year. I had it memorized. Watch it every year. It's great. It's really.
Have you watched it since?
It's masterful. I haven't watched it in a couple of years. It's masterful. I mean, it's such a seamless thing. You can't look at it and go, "Oh, this is a setup. This is a punchline." It's this seamless show.
Yeah. The special, if you don't know, is Bill Cosby himself.
Yeah.
One of the best specials ever. I remember I watched it on my 21st birthday with a friend, and I'd already seen it many times.
Yeah.
But I remember, you know, I was a little further into stand-up at that point, and I remember seeing, in my mind, I could envision the set list on a yellow pad. I was like, look at how cyclical this whole thing is. Look at all the pieces. He developed this, you know, he riffs on this, and all the stuff that comes together. But that special really tells a great story, which is the whole story of life, because he talks about childhood, he talks about fatherhood, and he talks about grandfatherhood.
Yeah.
And it's this whole, you know, on every level.
And he talks about just being single and alone and doing drugs, and, you know, it's everything. The mundanity of just going to the dentist, I mean, it's everything, yeah.
Yeah.
We go through the birth of his first child, yeah, everything.
Yeah.
It's a shame that, now that's
no reason to talk anymore on that. I mean,
yeah, but I mean, I
there's, it is tough.
There's another there's like a there's this rock group called Lost Prophets that I like.
Yeah, I remember them.
And I enjoy their music, but then came out later that their lead singer was like a child molester and stuff or whatever, and I was like, ruined that whole thing. Now it's like I can't listen to that music anymore.
That's tough.
Yeah, I don't know. It's just it stinks.
Fortunately, there's like a lot of bands,
right?
So
yeah,
I think you're good.
Yeah, sure.
You don't need to listen to them.
Yeah,
there's
other
music.
Yeah, Cosby is holding up a whole thing.
Yeah.
Well, honestly, like what's interesting about the Cosby thing is, obviously he, you know, deserved all the acclaim he got.
Yeah.
At the time, he really was revolutionary and groundbreaking and prolific. A lot of things.
Yeah.
But he, Dick Gregory, I think, was the real revolutionary comic at that time, and he was kind of marginalized because he was a little more political, which Cosby was not. That's part of what made him so popular.
Yeah.
So Dick Gregory said some really challenging things at a time where not only was it taboo to be a black performer, but to be a black performer who spoke the truth was like a whole other thing. So I think Dick Gregory like kind of deserves that spot that Cosby has in the canon of
really?
Stand-up. Yes, I think
so. Big words.
But yeah, you should read his book, man.
Gregory?
Yeah.
All right, I'll do it.
It talks all about the hustle and all about like, you know, what it takes to really stand up and, you know, say what you feel, especially at a time when a lot of people weren't, you know, maybe deep down knew the things that he was saying, but he did not have the popular opinion on a lot of things.
That's tough.
Because he was a self-actualized black man at a time when that was very intimidating.
Well, we saw what happened when people said what they wanted, you know, in the initial throes of comedy with Lenny Bruce,
man.
He tried to talk and get arrested before he even says a word.
You know, I read his autobiography, too. And
how to
talk dirty and influence
people.
And what's great about that one is so he went to the Supreme Court for profanity, which live performance profanity, and so he kept getting arrested, and he kept going to court, and
I studied profanity and obscenity.
Yeah.
In journalism school, I mean that was a big moment. We did communication law, and it was a big moment where we really hit those points hard of what it is to be profane and obscene and how it's defined and how that's how the Supreme Court, you know, responds to that kind of stuff and he's a big part of it.
And he actually is one of the few cases in the history of the Supreme Court to posthumously reverse the decision.
Wow.
So so New York after his death many years later reversed the decision.
Yeah.
But anyway, So he kept getting arrested for performing. They would take him away, and then he would go to court cases, and they wouldn't let him defend himself and tell his jokes. They would have a police officer tell his jokes for him. and he would butcher them, and they were like, "This is," and that just shows you how fragile that thing is, where it's like the performer really does have something. They can talk
so
about
it. They have somebody read it.
He never got to do his stuff for the,
so they have somebody,
for the jury.
So that somebody would read it, and they were just like, oh, this is...
this guy's not funny.
Yeah.
And so that's a very fragile thing, where it's like, yes, he was talking about offensive and challenging things, but he was incredible at it, and he could get away with it.
And he had to spend most of his career, I mean, he literally spent most of his career just reading police reports.
Yes.
His arrest reports.
Yeah. But no, that really does tell you something about the comedic mind or the performer is like, it's very, you just take one element out of it and the whole thing could fall apart and be like, this is not good.
Right. But the element that you're talking about is the vessel, the comedian himself. And you know, so and that just goes to show. I mean, it's the thing where we're trying to tell each other other people's jokes just because they reference, and then
that,
and then we can't tell the other people's jokes because the vessel is the important part.
Uh-huh.
You know.
Yeah, and you can look at subject matter, uh-huh. and you could walk away from a show and be like, that guy talked about this, this, and this, and this,
mm-hmm.
but why he did those things or how he did it was because he made it funny.
Yeah.
And so like whenever people get in trouble for telling jokes or whatever and the media slams them, they always forget to highlight like what was the joke, what was funny about it.
Yeah, well,
you know.
Yeah.
Instead of just like he made this kind of a joke.
Yeah.
It's like, well, you know, maybe there was a reason he did that, and because it was funny.
What was your joke? Right. If you're going to touch on touchy stuff, it's got to be funny.
Yeah. But like the people who do that, like if you do that a lot, obviously, like, you know, open micers and stuff try to come out and do these edgy, touchy things,
right.
and it doesn't work. But the more and more you do it, the better you get, because you have to be better at it, or else you're just never going to get any work, or you're never going to do well. So you have the only way.
Go even smaller, you're not going to get the laugh.
The only way
to the thing you crave and desire and need is a laugh.
Yeah.
Forget worried about the career. You want to get the laugh.
Sure, but then there also is like, you know, people. It takes a certain awareness. I think a lot of people aren't getting laughs, and a lot of people aren't very aware of what's happening on stage. And they there is a delusion thing that's very prominent in a comedy, and hopefully that gets worn away as time goes on.
Yeah,
but I think I know a lot of people that are pretty far in that are still, you know, still holding on to that. I think I guess you need a little bit of it, but
Is this what it's like 6 hours in a car with you guys?
Dude. We haven't turned the radio on once yet.
Yeah,
we have good conversations.
Debate back and forth.
Yeah,
when we can.
Yeah,
and, you know, and we add somebody in like Osama. It adds all the dynamic. Well, generally, because I have a very villainous kind of personality. So as soon as you put another person in the car with me, Andrew, there's just a lot of jokes about me all of a sudden. It's very interesting.
Well, it's because I can't make the jokes. If it's just him, I can't make fun of Dan to him.
It's weird.
I have to make fun of Dan to somebody else.
But I'm always the butt. It never becomes anybody else. I have a root against energy that I can't put my finger on.
But it's because people know you can handle it.
I don't know.
This is the thing we've been talking about a lot on tour.
That I can handle it.
Well, it's that a lot of times people are have a personality that's... Being sensitive is good, but being hurt by certain things, by truths, is not a good quality, and it can actually affect... It can affect relationships.
It's tough for an artist. It's tough from an artist standpoint because it's going to affect your art.
So
now you're just trying to please all of the people, and you're not really necessarily worried about moving forward.
Yeah. So I know I can make fun of Dan because I know he won't be hurt by it, and I know he knows I love him, and that's why that's okay. But then there are many people where it's like you. It's not fun to walk on eggshells around people. It's not fun to not know what you can and can't say around people, because I don't want those restrictions, because I think I'm coming from a good place all the time.
But especially in this, it's like you feel like the artistic comedian community can handle a little bit of what do they call it? You know, snaps on the smallest level. A roast, you know, and that's what, you know, that's what we were talking about before. Was one of the first tours ever. I was a young comic, but I had the entrepreneurial spirit, and I got Giannis, Pappas and Nate Bargatze in a car together to do a tour right before the Obama election.
Did you see Nate?
Nate's great.
Yeah.
Nate's
phenomenal.
The
best, man.
I love him. And I love Giannis. And I put them together on a tour, and I was the low man on the totem pole. And the whole trip, you know, me driving them in the car to seven shows that I booked, and I felt that I deserved some respect and admiration for that. And they just shit on me for, you know, 6 hours a day while we're in the car. And, you know, it's, and that's part, and you know, and Giannis had that same experience when he was opening for the Chappelle Show guys. You know, he was opening for Donna Rawlings and Charlie Murphy, and I can't remember who else was on that trip. And they were doing the same thing to him. So there's just there's a history of that, and having a thick skin is part of the whole thing. Especially since you know as an artist and as a performer, the day you start is your worst day, and every day you get better.
So, I think I've had worse days since the day I started.
But you rebound, as a whole, sure. You didn't get worse.
Yeah,
you get lost sometimes. You get lost somewhere between the beginning and the middle, you get lost at some points. About you're like, what the hell?
Sure.
What's my voice? What am I supposed to be doing? You know. So sometimes, so you get worse for a little bit, but you rebound pretty quick.
I like. Hold on. There's a little exposition that needs to go for this. So Dan has this thing he wants to do. Doing Adele.
This made my girl laugh really hard, and I was just, we were driving in the car back, and it's Adele song Hello as a hen. I think it's hilarious. I would never do it on stage.
Obviously, that's the bit I've been making fun of. And I just like the idea of you're talking about finding your voice. Like that flashes in your mind, and you're like I found it. The true discovery.
The whole set is just me doing different songs.
You're like, sometimes you're lost, but then you know you really put the work comedy's a journey, and then you arrive at your Adele hen.
Adele is a hen. But here's the thing, Adele is a hen is funny, first of all. Second of all, not every artist can be a hen. You can do The Weeknd as a hen, okay? You can do Adele as a hen. You can definitely do Lady Gaga as a hen. Okay, Ray Sherman, you couldn't do as a hen, so it's tough. It's not for every fit, but the ones when it fits, man, it really is. It is a car killer. It is a road trip killer. Adele as a hen doing Hello.
And now to close out the podcast. Adele as a hen.
I don't have the register, like I said, to do it, but yeah.
But so you can download it on iTunes.
Me doing Adele. It's my album.
Wait, can anybody put anything on iTunes?
Yeah.
I'll do it.
When I get my voice back at the end of the trip, I'll put it up there. We'll do it.
Yeah.
Adele as a hen by Dan Frigolette.
Put it up there.
And follow me on Snapchat.
Yeah. All right, guys. Well,
Shane, we love you. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks,
appreciate
man.
It.
It's a good time.
Yeah. This is awesome.
So Friday, Blueberry Hill. Saturday.
Elvis Room.
Yeah, Elvis Room.
Mulan Events Saturday. A place called Jefferson Ballroom. They're so great to us. They run the Centennial Beer Fest they run every year. So that's how we got in touch with them. And we didn't get to work with them last year. Working with them this year. So that venue is really great, and they're being great to us, and we love that. 7 and 9, we're going to pick the winner on Saturday, and then they are going to do the 9 o'clock show, sold out, for a bunch of sold out tickets, and we also gave some tickets to some veterans in the area. And then depending on the schedule, man, we haven't had a lot of good luck. The guy that won in Vegas and the guy that won in Oklahoma City couldn't get in the car with us. That was an option. Get in the car with us, finish the tour. So we're hoping, fingers crossed,
Osama won Albany,
in
right?
Albany, yep.
A year ago,
yep.
Right?
Yep.
And so he did yep. a few tours.
No, and there's know, and there's in the future opportunities there, but you know, but hopefully, you know, whoever wins, knock wood, can hop in with us and
right
finish
away.
The last six,
do some shows.
Six trips. You know, the last six shows.
Very cool.
That's the goal. You know, stage time. Location, location, location.
Comedy's Best Kept Secret Tour.com.
Hashtag Comedy's Best Kept Secret, yeah.
Yeah.
Check out the stuff.
And you got an official Facebook for that, the tour.
Yep, and Make Me Laugh St. Louis is the other thing.
So, yeah, follow all that. Follow these guys and follow with Dan on Snapchat for some of those videos.
And if you came on to listen to us, follow the Rock Paper Podcast.
Yeah, follow download the podcast, but overall, use your phone less. Yeah.
Fuck, man, go to Denny's, too. Denny's is good.
Yeah, shout out to Denny's. Yeah. And,
they're either gonna take this off the internet, or they're going to send us moons over my hammy.
All right, guys. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Shane. It's a good time. Rock Paper Podcast. Rock Paper Podcast. Rock, 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 rock.
Rock Paper Podcast, y'all.